Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at consumer issues and consumer complaints on the show. Our guest back once again, Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle, great to have you back.
It's always great to be here, Larry.
With us as well, Jared Albrecht, Senior Communications Specialist with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And Jared, great to see you again as well.
Great to be here. Thank you, Larry.
We will be talking, they released the top 10 list of consumer complaints today, and so we'll talk about that list. We'll talk about current imposter scams, tax identity theft, and of course, we'll take all your questions. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm looking at this list, this imposing list of complaints. Not too surprised at the top. Maybe we should start at the bottom of the list.
Well, that's one option. There's some new things at the bottom.
Well, fuel quality. That's why I wanted to bring that up, because what the heck is that about? That was the 10th highest complaint.
Right. And so the Bureau of Weights and Measures, which is a sister bureau within our division, has inspectors that are out in the field checking a number of things, price scanners, gas pumps for accuracy and fuel quality, and they work with the city sealers and municipalities. But consumers complain about, you know, the amount of gasoline that they receive or the quality. And this category, fuel quality, is about they believe they purchased premium gasoline rather than regular unleaded, and they didn't get premium is what they are complaining about. So our inspectors are out there, and they do fuel quality testing. They do it there at the pump, and they send samples to the lab as well with Weights and Measures. So if a consumer, you know, has a reason to believe that they don't think they're getting the grade of gasoline that they are purchasing, they can contact Consumer Protection. Will get you over to the Bureau of Weights and Measures, and they'll send out an inspector to do an evaluation.
That's number 10. And number 9, motor vehicle sales. I always feel so uncomfortable when I go to buy a car.
Yeah. And
it's
so,
just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's new and used, and there's a lot of disclosures that are required. You know, especially if it's a used vehicle, there can be as-is issues. There's safety concerns with the purchase, financing. There's so many aspects of that. But, you know, a number of these complaints end up being transferred to the Department of Transportation because they regulate car sales, and they register and regulate the auto dealers of our state. But these complaints can be that private sales aspect of it as well. So if a consumer is selling a private sale, or if they're using a different method and they're not a dealer, it can cover that. So it does make our top 10, and it is a consumer complaint whether it comes in within our, you know, specific agency or not.
I'm looking at this. The bottom three, the 8, 9, and 10 all have to do in some one way or another with automobiles. There's motor vehicle repair is number 8.
Yeah, so motor vehicle repair is just that. You take your car in to get it repaired, and, well,
It's not repaired.
Well, it could be that it's not repaired. It could be that you get it, and then later on something happens and a warranty's not followed up with as promised. It could be a matter of you get a second opinion and you feel that something was misrepresented to you about the safety concerns. You know, that there was tactics used to say that this repair was required and needed for the safety of yourself and your vehicle. But then it gets into workmanship, it gets into pricing and price quote aspects. You know, you're told it's going to be $50 and you pick it up and it's $150 later.
Yeah.
So those are what those complaints are about. And, you know, The state has a law that says if you drop your vehicle off face-to-face during regular hours, you have to sign one of three different estimate-type situations.
Yes.
It's really important. I mean, the dealer's supposed to do it, but it's important that you stay there and do that. I mean, one of them says, don't do anything until I tell you how, you know, until I know what it's going to cost. One says you can do a repair up to X amount of dollars because you take it in for a particular maintenance thing and you have an idea what that will cost. But then don't go above that, even if you find something. And the third one is really, hey, have at it. You know, you're agreeing to just let them do and fix whatever it is, no matter what the cost is. So, you know, consider and then sign the appropriate one that works for you. And then you know what your expectation is when you come to pick up the vehicle.
I trust the people who work on my car, but still, I sign the middle one, where you say, well, if it's lower than $200, give me a car, whatever.
Right. And, you know, I have a relationship with my service provider as well. And so what happens there is I go in and say it's making this kind of noise and doing this kind of flashing, or it feels this way when I drive it. And you go, oh, it's probably this. But, you know, so that's going to cost this amount of money. But we'll take a look if I find anything else, or if it's going to exceed that. You know, he has to call me because I stick with number two as well.
Well, on to medical services, which was the seventh, rated seventh, I guess, more, the seventh highest number of complaints came relating to medical services.
Right. It's a brand new to the top 10 in that number seven position, just short of 200 complaints at 195. And this is consumers who are complaining about a billing dispute that they have, a bill that they've received from a clinic, a hospital, a chiropractor, a physical therapist, a treatment center, whatever that may be, and they have found issue with the bill. Oftentimes, what we've seen in the complaints is those issues arise from misrepresentations or misunderstandings in communications as it relates to a price quote, how much something will cost, what may or may not be covered. And so then a consumer sees this on the bill and they had a different understanding. The other thing is they're examining their bills and they see things that they didn't authorize. And so there's unauthorized charge issues there that we're also seeing from those consumers. So it's a new category and it's really great that they are examining those bills.
Speaking of that, Liz in Appleton has something I think that relates right to that. Liz, hi.
Hi. I called because I thought that this was a perfect opportunity to mention this. I went in for an x-ray. I had something unfortunate happen at the hospital. It was all taken care of. And I have Medicare, and I also have a WPS plan, which is excellent, as a supplemental. But I got this notice one day, and I opened it, and it was from a contracting facility with the hospital. It's for radiology. And anyway, I called, and I said, well, oh, I think this is wrong. And first of all, you have my name wrong, which I think is the issue, because it said I owed $75. And every time I call, I ended up having to call numerous times. I got different people. They never seemed to have notes from, you know, what I had dealt with before. So anyway, finally, I scanned things and, you know, supposedly got this taken care of. And then I got this bill saying, oh, it's still not taken care of. You'll have to call Medicare. Well, I used to work with Medicare, so I kind of know that's unusual. Anyway, I called WPS. They told me the number I should use. And the man on the phone said, from Medicare, well, we don't show that you owe anything. And if this provider does not take care of this, first of all, you'd probably want to tell them that there's a provider portal, and if that doesn't work, they should probably call us, because this is wrong.
Yeah. A lot of hoops you jumped through there.
Well, the thing is, I called, and as soon as I called them back, and I said, in Medicare, said, oh, they said, that's great, thank you, and they quickly hung up. So thinking about it, I think it was maybe a scam, because if I had paid the $75, and there were X number of other people who did the same thing without questioning it, that would be money that wasn't owed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending upon, since you said it was this third-party contractor, depending upon where that bill really came from, somehow they could have gotten information, and that could be. It's complicated, these medical bills can be, especially here there's two, and you know, there's Medicare, her insurance provider, then there's what you have, deductibles, co-pays, all sorts of different premiums and things going on. And you know, we personally in my household experienced a medical billing thing, and it took a number of months and a lot of paper. And so there's a lot of paper trail and documentation to keep of who you talk to here and there. And sometimes getting them to communicate with each other is the biggest battle. And then there's always due dates. So you're kind of panicked there. So it's really important to track all this. And sometimes what we're encouraging consumers to do is just keep a log of treatment. If you are in a situation where you're having to have a lot of treatments, what day, what doctor, what treatment, because you can easily lose track of things.
Thank you very much for calling, Liz. Appreciate your call. So medical services, we'll take one more call and then we'll go back to our list. Tom in Madison, I pushed the right number here. Tom, hi.
Good morning. I'm probably calling about the number one complaint, and that is these spoofing or phishing phone calls and also spam email. I do not see that the laws do anything to deter or punish the people that are doing this, no matter where they are on planet Earth. I don't understand why the providers cannot better screen these errant, phone calls of false telemarketing schemes. It just seems there's no consequences. And I'm wondering, frankly, as somebody who has filed complaints with the department, in particular about phone calls, but I've had the mind to do it about spam email, why don't we have a special legislative session to give us all high-speed broadband statewide and eliminate these spam calls and spam emails?
I'm not sure if, Tom, I'm not sure if that would do it. But let's have Michelle and Jared, if you want to chime in too, go ahead. But Michelle?
Well, so I'm going to break down different pieces. You know, when we receive inquiries or complaints about spam emails, we get those off to our federal partners because of how those are transmitted, and the laws that we have don't cover those. So that those are forwarded on to the federal government. As it relates to calls, yeah, there's frustration in out there as it relates to why does the phone keep ringing? I'm on the do not call list. Well, we have a number of investigations active, open. We're in the middle of negotiations with a number of companies as it relates to violations of the do not call law. That makes up a certain percentage of the phone calls and what these complaints are. The other batch of these complaints are these imposters that are using different technologies. They could be calling from overseas. They're not selling anything. They're just trying to get something from you. And that's not traditional telemarketing. And while there's regulation saying don't spoof, you know, don't misrepresent that caller ID, getting at these individuals who may be in Jamaica or Russia or India, we saw that big crackdown on the IRS in October of 2016, where thousands of people were involved in that call center. So it takes a lot of effort and time, and the effort and time's put into it by us and the federal government, certainly in sharing information, but results sometimes come a little slower there. But the other good news is that in November, the FCC changed some regulations as it relates to telecommunications carriers and providers, and that they don't have to connect all the calls anymore. If they can show that a call is an abandoned number, they don't have to connect that if no one's on the other end of who's making that call. If they can show a pattern of annoyance and that it's not tied up to a certain provider, they cannot connect that call. So regulations have changed a bit to assist with this effort and try and no longer connect some of these types of telemarketing calls, as we'll call them.
I was so mad at myself this morning because I got a call. It looked like a local call, and I my app that identifies scams didn't say it was a scam, and I picked it up, and of course it was a robocall of some sort, which I then hung up on right away. But I was so Man, but it is frustrating because, you know, if it's a local looking call, Jared, you want to answer
it. You sure do. That's that neighbor spoofing we talk about on here where the first, you know, six numbers of the 10 is familiar to you, and it makes you wonder what it is and how important it is. In fact, before we walked into the studio here, one of your colleagues at WPR was telling me about how, I think even yesterday she said she was on the phone and she was just taking a normal call and she saw that she had another call come in. It was a local call and she thought, well, I had just ordered food. So maybe it's, you know, related to that. She goes over and she says, you know, they got me. But it's hard to tell with this technology they're using to mask where the call is actually coming from. It's
difficult.
Terribly difficult on our end to figure out what's what.
Tom, thanks again for calling. By the way, you can join in, too, with your questions or concerns. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer. The Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection today has released its top 10 list of consumer complaints for 2017. And from the department, Michelle Reinen, the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, Jared Albrecht, senior communications specialist, our guest today to talk about that list and, of course, to take your questions as well about consumer scam issues. We went through the seventh on the list was medical services, and Jared, gas pumps were number six.
Yeah, gas pump accuracy was number six last year as well. This year, the title's a little bit changed. Just call it gas pumps. What that number consists of this year is a combination mainly of gas pump accuracy, so people questioning what they're getting for their money, thinking they're being overcharged or you know, getting under delivery. And it's also gas pump skimmers, which we heard about the last couple of years. Late 2016, we started seeing the gas pump skimmers showing up in the state, the internal skimmers. Those complaints carried through in 2017, that was the majority of what we saw for that category last year. It was down pretty significantly, almost about 15%. What we see, I think, in the Weights and Measures Bureau is that complaints about gas pump accuracy, what people are getting for their money, dip a bit when gas prices go down. As they go up, people start to be much more sensitive about it. So last year we had lower relative gas pricing. That was down, but people were still making complaints about skimmers, worrying about their credit card transactions at the pump.
Yeah, that makes good sense. You know, number five on the list was home improvement, and that's one that probably typically comes up. I think that's been on the list for a while. I'm not sure if that's gone up or if it's gone down. It's number five this year.
Yeah, it's still there. It sits at number five. It's happy at number five. No. So of those complaints, there are 403. We see a lot of consumers complaining about workmanship, so the quality of work. But then we also get into those situations where it might be a partial performance issue where they show up, deliver materials, and begin the job, but then the job's never completed or finished. We also have situations where money's paid down and no one ever comes to perform anything. Delays in performance, it takes too long, failing to provide warranty service and follow-up. So it's really important, again, to get your contract in writing, understand exactly what you will get for your dollar. You know, what does this contract entail? And make sure it's what you expect it to be. Everyone's on the same page at the beginning. And then stay in communication and on top of things. And if things start to dwindle, you know, the communication starts to break down and you're not getting in there anywhere, contact consumer protection.
Okay. And we'll go back to the phones and Chris and Ryan waiting. But first, I want to go to number four because identity theft. That's one, man, if your identity's stolen, that is a real pain to get that resolved. And
it is.
And here it is, number four on our list.
It is at number four, and there's a slight increase over 2016, the number of complaints, just a few more. Kind of broke this down into thirds this year. A third of the complaints that we received were about data breach-related identity theft issues. The other third was tax-related identity theft, and then just outright identity theft and fraud situations. So in the past, the tax ID theft has really dominated that general category. But with the Equifax breach that we've talked about on the program about every month in September of 2017, we saw a different take on that category this year, but I should mention we are still in Tax Identity Theft Awareness Week here. It ends at the end of the week because you could start filing your taxes, and that's one of the best ways to combat that. File early. So you claim your return first, and you're the legitimate claimer on that return. But
that's a good tip.
Yeah. The other side of tax ID theft that people might not really consider is that if someone's out there earning wages in your name, that's related to tax ID theft because you would get a letter from the IRS saying, what about these unclaimed wages when you do file your taxes? So that's where it comes and is important that over the year you're monitoring your credit report, but you're monitoring your Social Security Administration report as well to make sure no one's out there working under your Social Security number.
Let's take a call from Claire next in Madison. Claire, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I'm so glad you have this show regularly. At least twice in the last, 6 weeks or so, I've gotten junk mail with my address on it, but the addressee's name is someone I've never heard of before, a total stranger to me. And I'm wondering, should I be concerned? I've lived at the same address since 2003, and this just started happening. Is this somebody possibly trying to use my information with their name? And if so, what can I do about it?
That's certainly a consideration. And so what you would want to do about it is you can check one of your free credit reports to verify that, you know, your address is the only address tied to you and follow up that way. But the other thing that it could be is a bad marketing list that's out there. I don't know how long you've lived at that residence, if someone there lived there before, but you could also talk to your post office about it as well. Just see, you know, if they have any additional information or concern that mail in someone else's name is coming to you, and just verify that they don't have another residence listed there. When you move from a residence and change your address with the post office, they send notifications to the address you're moving from and to the address you're moving to. You should get that. So that's one way to know if your mail's ever being rerouted or changed. And they can look into that potentially, or at least file a report about this and just verify anything that's going on there as well.
Yeah, I still get some mail addressed to an elderly lady who lived in my home, not with me, but had the home prior to me 10 years ago. And she's long since passed on.
Yeah, and so there's a marketing list that's just been around a really long time.
Yeah. Ryan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I have a question going back to you were talking about the spoofing phone calls.
Yeah.
And my question is, what is the people on the other end of the line, what is their end game, and are they achieving it by my just picking up? Because I think we've all been caught by that local area code.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well,
Jared, go to you.
We certainly advocate that people not interact with scam calls that come in. Taking action, picking up and engaging in any way, including pressing a button to get off a list, which is often an option in those types of calls, that could trigger your number as live in the dialer's computer system.
Yeah, I mean, those are options. So you're asking, you know, what happens if you pick up? And that could just indicate that live call situation. You could end up on a lead list. So it's always best. Our first advice is don't pick up.
Don't pick up.
Then it's if you pick up, don't engage. Then it's if you've engaged, you know, said hello and you're there, don't hand out any information. You know, it's kind of a three-tier approach depending upon how things have played out.
And if it's somebody, if it is a crank call, this came up before, somebody calling and it's a scammer and they ask you, is this so-and-so, and you say yes.
Right.
You don't want to say yes because that can turn into somehow you agreeing to a contract.
Right. Well, I'm glad you bring that up, Larry, because we just got, you know, notification in the this week that that scam is starting to circulate in Wisconsin again. And we call it one of two names, either the Can You Hear Me scam or the Yes scam, because both of them are trying to get you to say yes so they can record that and use that recording of you saying yes to prove that you authorized some charges that will later appear, even though that was never a question in the entire conversation. So it's really important to try not to answer the phone, but then don't just give simplistic one-word answers to questions.
The number three on the list, by the way, was telecommunications. Does that relate to what we've just talked about, or what, is it something, not something different, isn't it?
Telecommunications is issues with cable, satellite, cell phones, yeah, the bundled packages. A lot of it has to do with billing issues, misrepresentations, quality of service, that type of thing.
I've had people in the past complain that they've been paying a bill and there's a charge on it that, when they look at the total charges and actually take the time to look, they say, well, wait a minute, I don't have that, and I'm paying for it.
Cramming. Yep,
cramming.
That's cramming, where something appears on your bill that's just not authorized. And it might be a totally unrelated to telecommunications. It could be for a travel club. They're just using the telecommunications provider as the billing affiliate.
Let's go to number two, because number two has been up pretty high on the list for a long, long time, hasn't it, Jared? Tenant-landlord relations?
It has. It likes to sit at that number two spot. I mean, you think about how many people rent in the state and how many landlords there are, and then you've got how many agreements are associated with those rental situations. That's just a lot of consumers with a lot of issues. The majority of problems that they'll complain to us about deal with security deposits, unauthorized entry to the unit, and evictions. Those are three of the primary reasons we hear from people about landlord-tenant issues.
And a lot of them. And then finally, the number one that I think pretty much everybody would guess is telemarketing.
Absolutely. So pretty much what we talk about every time we're on the program, which is good. I mean, some of what combating this needs to be is sharing the stories so people don't engage and fall victim to what's happening here. So what we heard from of more than 4,000 consumer complaints is things about calls where you need to renew your extended auto warranty. So you don't even have that car anymore, but it's time to renew that extended auto warranty. Or you never had an extended warranty, so what is there to renew? But that's what we hear about a number of calls in 2017. We talked about the Yes scam just a few moments ago. That hit heavy at the beginning of 2017. We also heard from consumers about the lower your interest rate calls. That had been very heavy in about 2012 and 13, but it made a resurfacing last year where people were getting the call to just, great deal, lower your interest rate, we can less payments, all of that, but that was a robocall. And then the imposters that we pretty much talk about. We have some new imposter scams that we're going to cover later, but the ones we heard about from 2017, the IRS, the utilities threatening to shut off your heat because of back payments on bills that are due, and then the Microsoft tech support scam, which specifically targets seniors, and that's for the low rate of $299, you know, pay right now. We will take a look at your computer that's giving off virus waves, you know, and give us remote access, and we'll take care of that right there. And not only have you lost your money, but now your computer's at risk because you've given remote control and there could be malware or spyware loaded on there. And so now you got to go through the whole clean machine process and likely engage a professional to do so.
Oh, boy. So that's number one. From telemarketing to fuel quality, there's the top 10 list. And I know we're going to get questions about all those areas. Chris has one that I think is kind of along the lines of one of them. Chris in Wisconsin Dells, thanks for calling.
Sure. Good morning. I owned a house in Milwaukee for 20 years, and I had an evil tenant on my first floor who put her gas bill. I never put my tenant's utilities in my name. That's just asking for trouble. And so I had a tenant on the first floor put her gas bill in my name without my knowledge. eventually the gas company filed charges, not charges, but they filed a suit against me, and the sheriff came and delivered the thing. And she accepted it, telling them that she was me. I never knew one thing about this. She was stealing my mail to cover the whole thing up. And I just moved into a house and had my gas turned on here. And I got a gas bill that had a $1,500 charge on it from that house that I haven't owned in 18 years, and I haven't lived in that apartment since 1986. So I called the gas company up and got the background information about what they claim had happened, and I got the form that I have to fill out that I haven't sent in yet for identity fraud. But just in case that doesn't go well, what can I do? And I really think that the utility companies ought to take some kind of an ID from somebody when they set up service.
Michelle, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a pretty complicated one because it deals with landlord-tenant, and it's not just outright. I mean, it's theft, but it's not outright. Because when you rent property, if you don't put the bill in your name as the landlord, which, you know, fine that you have the tenant do it, if they end up in arrears, they could go through the municipality to end up having the utilities default to the landlord, the property owner. And so then security deposit deductions and withholdings and small claims actions and things could occur. But this is the tenant stole the identity and put them in the name and not even was just in arrears. So it, yes, file all the paperwork that they have regarding the identity theft claim and with the utility company. Otherwise, you may need to talk to an attorney about a civil action matter with the landlord aspect. But I'm glad the police are involved as well because there is that claim of identity theft. I would run a credit report. You could contact Consumer Protection for an identity theft packet just to see to what extent this has gone and make sure it's limited to the utility and not anything more. Hopefully it's just tied to that property.
Yeah. How did she do that?
Yeah. So you can contact our 800 number, 1-800-422-7128. And they will get you a packet. If you want to talk to someone from our identity theft assistance team, then just follow through and ask to talk to that person. They'll transfer you over. Otherwise, you can go online and just download it. It's at datcp.wi.gov. And I should mention for your listeners, just in case, yesterday there was some technical difficulties with the 800 number that the line went down, a cable was cut in Florida, and that goes to our provider with our IVR and stuff. But it is up and operational this morning. It happened in the afternoon, and so there was a busy signal all afternoon. But if you called our local number, you got through. So, but it's working today for any listener that had trouble yesterday.
And again, just to add one more thing, you were talking about getting your credit check, and where do you go for that?
So in order to get your one or all three of your free credit reports that you're entitled to, you can go to annualcreditreport.com and get that online. But if you don't have a secure computer system to work from, then you can call to receive that. That number is 1-877-322-8228. But all that information's on our website as well, if you need it again later.
All right, Chris, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I hope you follow up with Michelle's suggestions here. I want to get to Jan in Viroqua next. Jan, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I have always gotten my cars from personal friends or relatives where I know the person very well and I know the car's history. And I'm now in a situation where to get the vehicle that will work best for me, I'm going to need to buy it on the public market. It'll be a used car. And I'm wondering what resources on the internet or otherwise are available to check the reputation of the dealer and to get objective information about the specific vehicle using the VIN.
Uh-huh.
Well, for looking into the business, the two things that come to mind are that you could check with the Better Business Bureau. Many people would do that. One other option is to contact DACAP at that number that Michelle had mentioned earlier, the 1-800-422-7128 number for our Consumer Protection Hotline. They can look in the Consumer Complaint Database and give you a sense of what we've heard from other consumers.
Mm-hmm. And you may also want to, I'm going to add one more, Department of Transportation. I don't know what they provide for information, but you can verify that they're potentially, or ask if their registration's in good standing and all that, since they regulate the sale of motor vehicles in this state.
And if there was a question relating to the VIN, that might be the way to go too with DOT.
Yeah, that and the VIN. And, you know, we don't regulate, we don't, you know, endorse one product or over another, but there are a number of products out there that you can check on used vehicles that allow you to use that VIN number to track the vehicle ownership and repair history, and any salvage issues or flood issues that may have been listed with an insurance company as well. So you might want to look at one of those products that are out there and available.
So how would you search that? You would look for products that
I think if you did a term search such as used vehicle...
tracking used vehicles,
yeah,
or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you know, verifying or
verifying.
Vehicle history, used vehicle history information. I think if you get that word history in there, you'll come up with things.
There we go, Jan. Thank you so much for calling. Let's take another call, this one from Elaine in Milwaukee. Elaine, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I wanted to share something that happened with me because it was so very weird and it really threw me, and I'm pretty savvy on scams. I got a credit card in the mail, you know, with the new expiration date and all the rest of the stuff you get. And there's a number that you call, and it's usually a 1-800 or a 1-888 number. Well, I dialed 1-800 and I got connected to a person rather than a machine. And the person said, well, you're activating a credit card. And I go, yes. And he said, well, that's just going to take a moment. I want to talk to you about something else. And what I had done is I had not hit the 1-800. I'd hit the 1-888 or the other way around. And I was now connected to somebody that knew there were enough of these wrong numbers that he's got me on the line.
Yeah.
And I want to warn people about this because it threw me. I thought, okay, clearly this must be the number. It's the number on my card. It wasn't.
Oh, I'm so glad she said it was a misdial, because I was wondering what else was going on. But that's what I was hoping. This is a real tactic, and Jared can talk to the online aspect, but phone numbers, they buy up phone numbers, the other variations, the misdials, the scam artists do, of legitimate companies and big companies. So instead of 800, the 888, the 877, or, you know, swap a number, the 56, it's 65, you know, those common misdial issues.
Yeah, and the area code ask variant you're going to have for websites is going to be the end of the URL. So if you put in a website and it's a .com and you accidentally put in a you know .org or .info or you know whatever it's going to be, that's the same type of thing. You're just going to the wrong place. And you may not know, the people who make these scam websites are very good. Some of them are very good designers. You have to just be really careful about what you're putting in for your URLs and your websites.
Elaine, I'm glad you were sharp and caught that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht, our guests today from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, as we look at the top 10 complaints of 2017 and are onward, and I don't know if I should say upward, maybe it's downward, with the new scams that are out there in 2018 here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer complaints today with our two guest experts, Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht. Thank you so much for joining us. They're with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Every one of our lines is filled, so let's go back to the phones. And I believe David in Ironwood, Michigan up next. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, my issues with AT&T. This is over a year ago. One of those buy iPhone 6S and get one free. And when I got it, Turned out they sent me the iPhone 6, and that's a 6S. And they, I noticed the billboard being billed for two, and they said, oh, it takes a few months for the thing to show up, the credit. So I waited, and still, and I called in again. And then they said, oh, that's for this, only for the 6S, not the 6. Is that what I wanted and stuff? And they said that they couldn't change it, whatever. I got mad, and they suggested send me a free Samsung, what I call it. And then they sent me a free Samsung, but then when I got it, I asked, where should I send the other iPhone, whatever, and is it going to credit my account? And they said yes, and a few months went by, and it's still double billing. And then what I found out later when I checked the price is that, oh, no, that's the price for the iPhone 6S, which is about a couple, at least $100 more than the 6. So they're charging me for the 6S, and it's still not resolved. I'm paying an extra $500. I went to the small claim. They said I could get a cash settlement, but then I would, once I get that, I would have to collect it. I don't know where to collect that.
Yeah. Lots of issues there, David. I'm sorry for your problems. You're in Michigan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Michelle, you may have not be able to help in directly.
Right. So what we would want to do there is connect David with the Michigan Consumer Protection Office, since the issue and transaction and everything is happening there, and he could go to our website and hook up with us, and we'll transfer the information to Michigan, or he can go and look for the Michigan Consumer Protection Office and contact them. He could try calling the 800 number, 1-800-422-7128, and we can give him the phone number for Michigan. Okay. From us as well. So some options there to help him out.
1-800-422-7128. That's the number, David. And you know, you've had some luck with this, haven't you, Michelle, here in Wisconsin, when you've intervened on behalf of consumers?
We have. And some of these situations, like David's experiencing, take a little bit to unravel, even when we get involved with them. Some companies are larger than others, and it might be difficult to unravel things. But yes, we've had success in this area.
So don't give up on that, David. You have every right to your money and to what you actually paid for, and I hope you'll follow through. Thank you. Darcy in Wauwatosa is up next. Darcy, hi.
Yes, good morning. I had a situation where I was online and I wanted to get a credit report, and I filled out the documentation. And I did receive them in paper form because I didn't want that information out on the internet. And they pages and pages and pages from the three different companies, Experian or whatever the names are. But I never received a credit number. And they said I needed to contact them again. And that was very confusing to me because they have all my information. Why wouldn't they give me a credit rating number?
Yeah, so your credit score, in other words. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So, under federal law, you're entitled to a free credit report from each of the three major credit reporting agencies, but that's to verify identity theft and the information and transactions. That doesn't include a credit score. That's a different banking aspect of things, and you can certainly join different or purchase different services where you will be able to check or verify your credit score. Otherwise, if you end up in a transaction or situation where you are needing a loan or financing, they tell you what your credit score is when they do those credit checks as well.
I'm a member of my credit union, and they, when I go online to check just my statements and so forth, they give me the credit score that they have for me.
Sure, the service, that's a service extra you probably as a member that they provide to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a number of credit cards that are offering that as a service option as well.
Yeah, so that's something to think about too, Darcy. Thank you so much for calling. And on to Mary Beth in New Berlin. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hello. I think is kind of an interesting situation. About a year ago, my insurance changed, so I changed the dental clinic that I was going to. And ever since that time, I'm getting emails from a dental clinic in Grand Rapids, Michigan, asking me to verify my upcoming appointment. And the email is to my first name, but my first name is spelled wrong. And what I've been doing is dragging them to trash and then deleting them immediately, but I just find that very odd.
Jared, what do you think?
I'm wondering if is it a parent business relationship? Is that the larger company that owns the clinic that you're using now?
No. I go to a private clinic that's mm-hmm. privately owned here in Wisconsin, and it's not part of a larger group.
Okay, and you have checked with them?
I have not checked with my clinic at all.
Okay, well, I would probably start by checking with them and seeing, because it could be a trend, and it could be something that we certainly would want to know about. Would you suggest we take a complaint on that, Michelle?
Well, at this point, I think it's a matter of not engaging. We don't know, you know, if it's just a generic something or if through a marketing list someone got insurance information, you know, that it's shared with some kind of marketing department, and now this one's doing it through a phishing scam situation. So right. I think your technique of drag, drop, delete is quite perfect here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Larry, can I add one more thing to that for Mary Beth as well? Be sure, this is a good opportunity to be sure that you are checking your statements, your benefit statements that you get anytime you have an appointment. You know, so you're always wanting, we harp about check your bills, check your statements, verify this. But your explanation of benefits, say when you had an appointment, who had the appointment, what the appointment was, be sure that you're opening any of those and that there aren't appointments happening in this other location. I mean, then we have some identity theft triggers that we want to be sure we look into, and then you need to contact Consumer Protection.
Okay, there you go. Thank you so much. Marcy and Madison, your turn. Hi, Marcy.
Oh, hi, it's Mary, and I have two things. One is that when I have gotten robocalls before, I've noticed if I don't say anything, it'll just hang up on me, because I have a situation where I have to answer my phone with a lot of different numbers that I don't know. And the second thing is that my personal phone number has been used as apparently a spoof call, because I've gotten so many calls back from saying, hey, you know, I just got a call from this number. Who is this? I've gotten it from the same guy at least 4 times and a few other people. I don't know what's happening there.
Yeah.
We've heard from other callers who've experienced that, where their number's been used by a scam artist on the caller ID. They're not really calling from your number, but they're certainly making your number appear on that caller ID. And that's what Jared was talking about earlier, where it's neighbor spoofing is the name that it's been given. And that's making a caller ID look like somebody local is calling them. So you're popular, Mary. No, in that regards. But yeah, you're right. And so some of these auto dialers are engaged and triggered based on the voice prompt. So if you answer the phone but don't say anything, that could cause the robocall to not trigger as well. So there's another technique for monitoring calls.
Mm-hmm. All right. There you go. Thank you, Mary. Kim in Presque Isle, it's your turn. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I am calling. By the way, we love your show up here. It's always enjoyable to listen and so informative.
Thank you.
The question or the concern I have is my husband was in the hospital a couple years ago on an emergency basis, and we were told that the hospital was covered under our insurance plan at the time, and then we started getting bills from the doctors and other tests that were done in that hospital that were not covered under our insurance, and they were doing what they were calling balance billing, and it was thousands and thousands of dollars, and nobody seemed to be able to help us. It took years to resolve it, and we just finally got it resolved this fall, but it's one of those things I don't think that people are aware of. They don't know until they get the bills after they've been, you know, in emergency medical care and there's you know, everyone has told me there's absolutely no recourse. The only thing that seemed to move them was I had heard that medical bills are no longer an item that can go on your credit report, and that seemed to make them shake their head a little and try and help us. But it's criminal, basically. You know, you walk into these hospitals, they tell you that you're covered when you walk into the hospital, yet all these services for EKGs and doctors and surgical procedures, none of them were covered.
Oh. Michelle?
Yeah, we've seen some very complicated medical billing situations, and she's right. With regulations, it's incredibly complicated because if insurance companies or multiple insurance companies are involved in different things and emergencies, yeah, you don't have time to question and check things out ahead of time. But if people have plans where they need to make contact with their insurance provider as soon as you can, it's really critical that you do that to get as much coverage or engagement or advice and transferring as you can. And then be sure that you're documenting whatever's told to you about coverage and even in emergencies as much as you can. Or who's ever there to help support and be your companion, have a voice and speak for you to be asking questions as they can. But most important is that emergency and getting stabilization.
Yeah, and it's
tough.
Yeah, it's extremely tough. And there are a lot of other tough things we're going to be able to talk about, too, as we move along here today. Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Jared Albrecht, Senior Communications Specialist in the Bureau of Consumer Protection with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We are going to take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back, and they'll be with us right up to 12:30. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along with us as we talk consumer protection problems today with Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Well, maybe you think you've been ripped off. Maybe you have some questions about a possible scam. Call in at 800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Michelle, before the show, you were mentioning that there's a kind of a newer scam or another scam kind of coming back. What's going on?
Well, so we have three imposter scam situations that we've been alerted to that all deal with different forms of government. So we might as well get those out there so telemarketing can hit number one again next year.
No.
But one of them is with the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC. And this one is about the Do Not Call registration, the National Do Not Call registration. So there are fake emails going out that look like they are from the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, telling people that their Do Not Call registration is expiring and that they need to renew that. These emails contain the FTC logo, but it sends you to a phony Do Not Call website and tells you to register your number again. Now, the important part here is the Do Not Call registration program is forever. It doesn't end. Right. So they do not expire. So you do not need to renew that. And you, if you remember a few months ago, DadCap's Do Not Call program, the number was being spoofed and it looks like we were calling out. Now, no one's really sure what they're trying to accomplish with these emails other than sending you to a fake website and getting phone numbers of individuals, and maybe they're asking for more information as well. So be sure you are just deleting these. You do not need to renew. If you ever want to verify that your number is still on the list, you can call from the phone number that you believe is registered, and it'll tell you that that number is registered. So you can always just call and verify.
So that's
one of them.
That's give me another one. Is there another one out there, Jared?
There is another one. This one is using the name and likeness of the Social Security Administration. And this is a two-parter because this is a phone scam and also an email scam, two different versions. The FTC had reported that people were getting calls from folks claiming to be with Social Security Administration, and they were telling these potential victims that there was a computer problem and that by phone they needed to confirm their social security number, which we know is a huge no-no. So that was the first part. And the email version that people were seeing was people had come across some fake websites that looked like a place where you would be applying for a new social security card. But those were fake websites that were specifically set up to steal that information. So, you know, that's like we mentioned earlier with being careful about what you put in the URL line for the web address. That's the guidance they have here. If you're supposed to go somewhere other than SSA.gov, it is not a legit Social Security Administration website.
SSA.gov, that's the place you want to go if for that. Michelle, are you tag-teaming it here?
Yep, number three. So the first two started circulating last week. This one just started circulating this week. This is, you know, this one is
really...
This is
really, a doozy here.
This is good.
This is a good one.
So
this watch
is,
out for this.
The Secretary of State is not emailing you, but individuals are receiving... pretend emails from Secretary Tillerson that say that they owe you money, you know, that the federal, the Secretary of State's office owes you money, and that they know this because of an investigation by the FBI and the CIA. Now, the email goes out and says that you'll get an ATM card and a PIN number, in the a PIN code, so you can get it. But the ATM card will have $1.85 million on it. So wouldn't that be nice that they owe you that much? But all you have to do is send in $320 and provide a bunch of information in order to make all this work and you to get that information. So... remember that you don't get emails directly from the Secretary of State. Nobody owes you $1.85 million. Just guessing, you know, with that one.
On an ATM card.
And then a government agency doesn't ask you to pay a fee to collect funds that you're owed. That's just not how that works. So all triggers there.
All right. Well, let's go on to the phones then and to Ruth in Chippewa Falls. Ruth, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I got something that I've never heard anybody getting. I got a credit card from Go Bank, which I never heard of before, and it says to call this 800 number to activate the card. And I tried all different ways to call and get a real person, and the only way I could get talk to anybody was to either put my Social Security number in or this credit card number in, which my feeling is going to activate the card. So I called the Better Business Bureau, and they sent me to you, to Consumer Protection, and thank God for that. And I have sent it off, but I thought it was an interesting thing to tell everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm getting from that story that you didn't turn in your Social Security number or the credit card number.
Oh, no.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
Good
step
for
one.
You, Ruth.
All right. I would think that might be a situation where we'd like to have her file a complaint with us so we can look into it.
Yeah, I think, Ruth, you said that you did send that in to us already, right?
Yes, I did. I just sent it off. But I just thought it was amazing that I could get a credit card from a bank that I never heard of.
Right. No, and I thank you for sharing that, because now others will watch for that, and hopefully others will file complaints so we can track back where the mailing's coming from, where the phone number leads to, and see what's going on there.
Yeah. So others, if you happen to be listening and the same thing happened to you that happened to Ruth, give the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection a call. It's 800-422-7128. Or go online to datcp.wi.gov. I think I got that right.
You did. You got it perfect.
I got that exactly right. And put in a complaint. Thanks again, Ruth. Appreciate that call. Josh in La Crosse has something for us. Let's go there. Josh, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. So I've got, I was in the Army in Germany. I had a bank account set up here in La Crosse. Forgot about it, got sent to unclaimed property. Now the state does not want to give it back to me because I don't have a bank statement claiming it's me. How can I go about to get that? Because I talked to credit union. They have nothing on file with me because it's been so old. I went through and submitted the process like I'm supposed to, but they say they can't give it to me.
Yeah, we don't have any... regulatory authority over that unclaimed property, and working with the Department of Financial Institutions, or Department of Revenue, thanks, Jared, is actually handles those, and whatever procedures or process, they may have an appeals process or type situation that you would need to contact them to figure out what other things you can do to validate your claim, because that's what's happening there. They're trying to make sure it goes to the right person and validate those claims.
So the Wisconsin Department of Revenue is the place to call. All right, there you go. Good luck. Thank you, Josh. Appreciate your call. James in Fountain City, your turn now. Hi, James. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. See, I got a... I got an email the other day from a guy named Robert Bell, and he asked me if my email address was business or personal. And I, like a fool, well, not a fool, but I said I responded back to it. Well, now he sent me an email, which is an absolute hoot, because he claims he works for a bank in England. And I haven't even finished reading this ridiculous email he sent me. But my question is this. Should I report this to someone, or should I just, like, you know, delete it and go, oh, this, I know it's a scam, but is it worthwhile to report this to you people, or is, or should I just, like,
dump
ax
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yes, you could report it to us, and then we can know about it, and we can warn others if it becomes a trend. Your email service provider will also usually have some sort of a general inbox where they want you to send spam emails. I can't remember quite offhand what they are for some of the major services, but you could probably find that with a pretty quick Google search. But they tend to ask people to email or forward those emails back to them because they're doing the same thing as us. They're trying to keep tabs on these things as they're going on.
Yeah, that's
And I thought this was a business question is what I thought it was, and that's why I responded to him. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. But once I got his email, I realized, oh, Jesus, this is a major
Oh, there you go, James. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Linda in Wausau up next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a question on some phone calls that I think are scams. We first got some calls maybe about a month and a half ago giving our grandson's name and saying that they were looking for him and our number had been given as a number to call. And they claimed it was on some type of a claim, but couldn't say what. Left another number to call back. And nobody answered there. They said they were closed. But the first caller, I'm from Wausau, and it looked like a Wittenberg number, except where the name would be was a three-digit number. And when I put that the phone number for Wittenberg into the computer, it shows it's like a line, but I don't think it belongs to anybody. Well, he got a couple calls, even one on his cell phone. We decided it was a scam. And then about a week ago, I got a call here from an 800 number asking for him again, saying there's some kind of a claim and they haven't been responding and he should call back. Then yesterday, I got a phone call again, an 800 number, and it said, this call is for, in relation to claim number, and we haven't been getting a response. It's important. It's time sensitive. You must call back, and they gave another 800 number to call. I don't know what – they said it was CredEx. And I punched in CredEx, and there is a company, but it doesn't seem to be one that would be making this type of call.
Hmm. Sounds a little suspicious there, Michelle.
It does. And so I would ask that anything that they have be put in writing. And then you have information to follow up on. You know, if you're concerned and ask, go ahead, put it in writing, and they can mail out the information that they have. I will say that recently I received a bizarre phone call, and I was, someone wants me to call and validate some information, and it was very vague, and it made no sense. But I had been to a clinic visit, 'cause I cut my hand. So I had to have that treated. And what it was the insurance company working with another company for subrogation. And so I called my insurance company and said, what is this? And they validated, oh, yes, that's a legitimate call. XYZ makes it. Could you follow up? And that number is legitimate. So only because there's things that sound similar about a claim, and they gave me a claim number and stuff, but I didn't use the phone number or any information from that call. Did the grandson have any kind of treatment or anything that...
No, he said, like I said, about a month and a half ago, we were getting a couple of these calls. His mother got a call. She lives in another town. And then he got one on his cell phone. And when he did try responding, of course, he didn't get anybody. And he took that message on his phone. He took it to the local police department. They listened. They said, well, that's probably nothing. But I just started getting a couple more calls. And the one from yesterday, it's like where the name would go, they just left it blank. And where the claim number would go, they left it blank. But the one of the calls, the first one was from Wittenberg, looked like a Wittenberg, and another one was an Eau Claire area one. But again, when you look up the number on the computer, it doesn't show it belonging to anybody. So I wondered if it was one of those dead number calls, that numbers that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that's tough. That sure does look like that,
and it smells
like that, so I'd go with it. But if they keep pounding, you've contacted the police, or just say, put it in writing and hang up, you know, and if there's a legitimate claim, they'll find.
They're just recordings.
I wouldn't worry about it.
I'd ignore it, for sure, if it was me anyway. Thanks, Linda, for calling. Appreciate your call as well. On to Cheryl in Rosendale next. Cheryl, hi.
Hi. I'm on the road listening to your show in my car, and now I'm pulled over. My husband recently passed away about 3.5 months ago, and I was wondering if there's anywhere that has a list of things you need to do to take his name out of the equation. I'm a little bit afraid of people using his name for things because they get his name off the obits and whatever.
Right. Is there a place? I'm racking my brain. And I'm not coming up with anything, but I'm not the expert. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, so usually there's some assistance that a funeral home will provide and some guidance that is there. Our identity theft team has some ideas. We don't have a fact sheet on that specifically at this point. So you could call Consumer Protection and ask to speak to an identity theft assistance person and talk through those ideas. And based on that, that gives me a good idea that we may need to put out a publication to help provide some guidance.
Yeah. And you might go back... even now, you could probably go back to the funeral home that if you worked with one, and they may well have some information for you as well.
Well, several of the people for billing and such that I said I needed to change it, they said it was a lot of rigmarole, so don't change it, your name. But then you keep getting things in his name, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I would make them go through the rigmarole.
Make them go through it, exactly.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I'm thinking, too.
Yeah. Good luck, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the help.
Bye-bye. Well, Lacey in Madison has something for us next. Lacey, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I just wanted to tell people about a scam that I know I'm a victim of that happened to me in the recent months, well, last week. I had been getting these phone calls from different numbers saying that, and they left a message saying that that a claim had been made against me, that legal action was going to be taken, and that I needed to call them back. And I kept ignoring them, and they sounded really they sounded like half recording and half talking. So finally, I got a call from one, and it said, call us back at this number, and it was like a California number or something. So I didn't call him back at that number, but I called him back at the number that was on my caller ID, which was a local number. And then when I got on there, it was a woman answered, and it was for a place called NEA Management. And she said, we've been trying to get a hold of you for such and such amount of time, and we're going through all these legal actions, and if you don't pay us now, we're going to sue you. And I said, well, why haven't I heard from the courthouse? Why haven't I heard from this? Why can other creditors get a hold of me, but you can't? And she was very convincing. And she had all kinds of my private information. She had my old email addresses, old phone numbers, old addresses. She has my Social Security number, everything, to the point where she made me start doubting myself and thinking, like, maybe I had done this. They said that in 2013 I had taken out an internet loan. And I had done that, like, maybe 10 years ago, so I was like, maybe this is real. But then I looked him up, and after I got the phone, I got in a fight with her, actually, and I told her she was feeding me a line of crap, and they were like, well, we're gonna serve you then. And I said, well, serve me then, because I don't understand why you haven't until now, if this is legit. Mm-hmm. And when I got the phone, I looked him up, and I found a listing on Better Business Bureau, and it said that all the different complaints were the same exact thing. These people calling him and saying that they owed him money and that they were going to do litigation if they didn't. And a lot of the people had complied and said that they had tried to pay them, and then they wanted more. And I just thought it was really scary, because now I know that they're out there and they have my Social Security number. I'm not really sure what to do about it.
What should she be doing, or is there anything that can be done about this? Michelle, turn
well, you. So first part, if there's a legitimate collection, there are specific ways that needs to be done, and that's regulated by Department of Financial Institutions, what collection agencies can and can't do as it relates to hounding you and how they go about that. Now, as far as further protecting yourself because they have your information, I would be monitoring my information regularly. So be sure that you are getting one of your free credit reports every 4 months from each of the three credit reporting agencies. Consider placing either a fraud alert or a security freeze on your credit report, because that's that use of Social Security number. Put yourself on a regular monitoring of your Social Security Administration statement to be sure no one's taking jobs, because that's how that's used. And the credit report will tell you if there's utilities or other things. And if you're doing the fraud alert or security freeze, one will alert you and notify you, and the security freeze will lock it down from being used. So those are all different things you can do to kind of safeguard your information. Okay. And we have all that in a fact sheet if you want to go to our website and grab that, different steps that you can do.
It's
okay, what was your guys' website again?
It's datcp.wi.gov.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And, you know, it's too bad, because legitimate businesses hate this as well, I'm sure, because it's got to cause them a lot of trouble too if they're trying to reach people with information such as this kind of the situation you had earlier, Michelle.
Absolutely. We've heard from businesses that don't necessarily like our don't answer the phone policy because they find it hard to get a hold of people, but it's hard to decipher the legitimate from the scam artists out there.
Well, I tell you what, it's always a pleasure having you guys. And once again, I'm willing to bet next year at this time, the number one complaint will probably be, again, telemarketing.
Yeah, if those scams are out there, I actually think I hope so, because that means consumers are reporting that and we need them to do it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Michelle Reinen and Jared Albrecht. Michelle directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Jared's the Senior Communication Specialist with Consumer Protection. Great to have them along. And they'll be back on March 1st. We'll do it all over again. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll be talking about orchids and the upcoming orchid show. So I hope you'll join us for that. And you can join us at 11 for that, or the first hour again, 7 a.m. on Saturday. Stay with us.